Welcome to the Neandertron Podcast. This is Isaac. This is episode 22. In this episode, Jess and I finish our discussion about Robert Tangora. We talk about Bob's teacher, Tok Sing Gim from Malaysia, and Bob's time training with him. Jess also reads from an article about Tok from Black Belt Magazine from the 70s. If you're interested in reading Bob's book, you can still get a copy of it on Amazon. There are also videos of him doing Dong style on YouTube, stuff like that. And then we get into the twisting in the arms of energy gates and cloud hands. And we talk about that for a bit. As always, check out the Patreon for more content and hope you enjoy the episode. Take care.
Welcome back to the Neja Chuen podcast with Isaac and Jess. We're discussing Opening the Energy Gates of Your Body by BK Francis. Since we've gotten to the cloud hands section, we've been talking a little bit about a friend of ours, Bob Tangora, who was a cloud hands expert, and some of our experiences with him and his teachings. And to get a little deeper into Bob's history and training, we wanted to look a little bit at one of his teachers, Sifu Tok Sang Gim of Penang, Malaysia. At some point in Bob's journey, he went to Malaysia to get deeper into Yang style Tai Chi of the Cheng Man Ching school. And there he found Master Tok, who had a great influence on him and his Tai Chi training. So I wanted to read this little excerpt from Black Belt Magazine, 1971. So way back in the day.
I think that's before you or I were both.
Yeah, that's born. Before we were even born, right? So Tai Chi's just coming onto the mainstream. And here's the deceptive tranquility of Tai Chi. It says here, the layman holds the image of Tai Chi Chuan as being impotent and ineffectual, whereas the Tai Chi master remains secure in the knowledge that his is a very deadly art indeed, an art that under its staid facade can give as well as take in a very literal sense. Few people alive today are better qualified to spread the message of the real Tai Chi than Sifu Tok Sang Gim of Penang, Malaysia. Known to his many devoted students as the Tiger, Sifu Tok has studied and competed with other instructors and practitioners without once meeting his match in the art. So it sounds like he's a pretty badass dude.
That's great.
And there's a picture of them doing brick breaking right here.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yeah.
And then the article's all applications. There's no solo moves. It's all applications throughout.
Bob said that the first time he met Tok, within about 5 minutes, Tog was throwing him up against a concrete wall, so we know where that comes from. It sounds like he was, and from what I've seen videos of the guy, he was a substantial fella. He was, he was solid looking dude. Right. And Bob told me that he trained Xing Yi or something for about 5 years before he started doing Tai Chi. His Tai Chi is a little bit less soft than the average Chen Man Ching, I would say. That he kept a little bit more of the a bit larger frame, more didn't quite have the fair lady's hand thing as much. Just solid. And I learned from Bob, there was a lot more internal stuff in his form that he kind of developed, so who knows where that came from, but he had combination sets and fast sets, and in one of the sets that you can find it on YouTube, there's a lot of stuff in it that looks like Xing Yi, and it's really interesting, and just
a half step. And
meaning it's Tai Chi movements, but with that sort of, half step explosive power type of stuff that's very Xing Yi, reminiscent. And sounds like a really fun guy.
Definitely. So here's a quote from about the Tiger's own teacher when he first started learning. I remember finding myself disturbed by how calm and composed he was both before and during the match. I was much taller, but I saw at once how graceful and swift his maneuvers were. I found it almost impossible to connect with any of my blows, and those that did land didn't disturb him at all. This, I was later to find out, was due to his inner body resistance. As it turned out, he surprised me with some counters I'd never seen before, and I came away from the encounter with some injuries. So after that, Sifu Talk went into the he dropped everything and joined in with Tai Chi. And it says here he sought to learn the secrets of Tai Chi and its principle of intrinsic energy. And I believe that's a translation of the term jin.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, sometimes chi, but, you know, essentially, yeah.
Intrinsic energy being the way you shoot somebody out. So, say, Peng Jin in Tai Chi, where you're pressing out, or Liu Jin, where you drag them in. That's what they mean by specific types of intrinsic energy.
Right. The you know, the phrase in Tai Chi is the separation of powers, right? The breaking up, you know, you start with yin and yang, and then you break that into four parts, and you know that, and that's kind of the, and then they break that into eight parts, and you know, but what do you call it? I guess sensitivity to those different energies or ability to feel those different energies, I think, was a big part of what Bob got from Talk. You know, it was sort of that refinement of the internal part of Tai Chi, not just the, you know, form part of it, you know, or the push.
It says here that they're way into inner resistance as well. It says that when his teacher, Talk's teacher, went to demonstrate at the Jin Wu Association, he demonstrated his inner resistance by involved inviting members of the audience to strike him at will all over his body. And so that seems to be another characteristic of Malaysian Tai Chi. I've seen demonstrations before of sort of being invulnerable, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing in the Singapore scene, apparently, also. You know, even some of the Taiwan guys got into, you know, it's that thing about like, here, I'm just going to stand here and let you hit me with stuff and it's not going to do it. You know, Wang Shijing was famous for just letting people sock him in the stomach and, you know, just stand there and laugh and pat his belly and say it was chi, right. You know? So, you know, I think that it's one of those things. It's like, it's a parlor trick in one sense. I mean, like, you're not going to do that in an actual fight, but it would probably come in handy if you could, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice ability to have, you know.
I mean, you know, so you're still going to step out of the way of the person's punch, but it's nice to know that if they hit you, it's not going to do anything, you know. Gives you a certain level of confidence in, you know, what's going to how the things. I mean, you know, I think that you know, that's a big guy thing also, you know, like more that the more, you know, if you got a big frame,
that helps.
It helps, you know. If you're a skinny little guy, I don't know if you just want to volunteer yourself to get punched. Right,
you're more likely to use the swifter, more agile defense than just standing there.
I mean, you certainly could develop the power to do it, but why? You know, it's just like. I mean, when I asked Bruce about that sort of thing, you know, he said what I just said, that, you know, it's great to have the ability to take a blow, but don't rely on it, because what if that blow is a knife? You know, you can't, you know, iron shirt your way out of a knife. So you might want to step out of the way just in case.
So according to Sifu Talk, Tai Chi is an art that was originally taught to Chinese royalty. But after the overthrow of the Manchu dynasty, Tai Chi instructors had to resort to teaching members of the lesser aristocracy to make a living. But they tried to maintain the prestige of the art. Even today, its status has never been degraded, and it is taught only to those who can afford it or are worthy of it. Undesirables are refused admission to Sifu Talk's classes. So you can hear that Tai Chi was kind of still this upper class, still this sort of refined art that wasn't taught to the masses. You know, it was meant to be for the nobility and this, you know, sort of for a special crowd.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, personally, I think these sorts of things are, you know, they're for everybody, but I think some of that is about protecting the quality of the tradition, right? If you just gave it to every person that wanted to, like, you know, kick somebody's ass within a short time, you know, your reputation would, you know, suffer, right? So I think there's a certain you know, highbrow kind of thing with Tai Chi, where, you know, we're above that, you know, just fighting for the hell of fighting, and, you know,
right.
And the, you know, they try to keep a certain, I mean, cause that's also Confucianism, and just in terms of like saving face and, you know, putting on a good, you know, like public, you know, display when you go right. out into the world, which I think is good. You know, I mean, I think it, you know, some of that can be very valuable, especially to young men, you know, learning martial arts. As you get older, I don't know how much you need it in terms of, I don't, you know, if you've already lived your life and been successful, I don't necessarily think you need somebody telling you to, you know, behave, but it can be useful.
Definitely.
Yeah.
In a martial arts context. So I wanted to end this article with a final paragraph. In combat, one cannot draw back and prepare to deliver strike. It must be delivered from whatever position the hands or feet happen to be in. Tai Chi punches can still be executed even when the fist is in contact with an opponent's body. The sudden release of inner energy that jolts the force of the blow into the opponent's body is known as Kang. It is the Kang that accounts for the 6-inch punch of the Tai Chi fighter, which rates high among the most effective strikes in all the martial arts. The Tai Chi fighter in combat is a model of calmness, his mind and spirit functioning in perfect harmony. So that's pretty sweet. So that close range power is a known feature of Tai Chi, where you just touch the person with your fist and then shove it into them and send them flying.
The Tai Chi punch and the technique of Bung Chen from Xing Yi are essentially the same. You know, it's that punch from your side to your center line, and you know, the palm goes from facing up to facing sideways. And, you know, that, like I said, I think it was last time about, that was the thing that Bob hit me with that I thought, oh, this guy knows something. And, you know, it, I think the thing that he said in there that I kind of, it's about the being able to issue power from wherever you are. Because that's a very, that is a thing in Tai Chi, but that's much more a one of the tenets, if you will, of Xing Yi than it is of Tai. You know, Tai Chi, that piece I often gets kind of left out, where, you know, you get a lot of Tai Chi people that when they get into a combat situation, they just keep backing up, because they're trying to do all this yielding stuff, and they don't just walk into the other person and punch them in the face. And, you know, and I think the fighting traditions of Tai Chi, that was the piece that they really held on to, because that's what fighting is. You're not always going to, you know, at some point you're going to have to punch the other guy in the face. And so I've heard that, especially from other people in the Malaysian Chen Mancheng lineage, that he was a bit more martial with those guys than, say, he was with the New York crowd. And so I think some of that might have come from him, but it may have also just been, you know, the culture was a little more rough and tumble. So, you know, I don't know if that highbrow thing really carried over as much once you got out.
Outside the article has both, you know, it has how high class Tai Chi is, and then the whole article is nothing but combat applications.
Right, but like once you get outside of China and you know, Chinese culture, which exists in lots of other places, you know, it, that stuff kind of, you know, I never had to do any of the real cultural Chinese stuff. I mean, I think I'd been training with Bruce for a decade before he ever made us bow, you know, it was like, you know, just like, and so I think, you know, like, the cultural influence is a big part of, you know, how the stuff gets taught and the way it gets taught too, because, you know, in a lot of cultures, it's not, you know, it's not okay to hit somebody in the face, where it's fine to hit them in the body. Where in other cultures, you know, if you just smack the shit out of somebody, you know, they'll get up and shake your hand, you know. So it just depends, I think, on that as well, you know.
So that brings me to the final piece of what we were going to cover today. I wanted to read out the obituary for Bob that Eric Peters wrote and spoke at his memorial service, just to give people a little bit of Bob's life story. So here goes. Robert E. Tangora, 1956 to 2019. Explorer, defender, and teacher. Died March 30th, 2019 in Santa Fe, New Mexico after an extended illness. The youngest child of the late Betty and Robert Tangora, he was born February 15, 1956 in Seattle, Washington. Robert completed high school in Mexico City and graduated from St. John's College, Santa Fe. After college, he lived in New York City where he restored antique furniture for Sotheby's and studied and taught Tai Chi Chuan. In the late 1980s, he traveled extensively in China, Nepal, and Malaysia where he studied Tai Chi, Qigong, and Buddhist meditation. Upon returning to Santa Fe, Robert continued studying and teaching Tai Chi. He then left Santa Fe to attend Cornell Law School. Upon graduation from Cornell, Robert was admitted to the New Mexico Bar in 1993. He specialized in criminal defense and appeals, arguing many cases in the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court of New Mexico. He also taught Yang and Wu-style Tai Chi, Qigong, and Taoist meditation in Santa Fe, California, and Boston for many years, and authored The Internal Structure of Cloud Hands, published 2012. Robert was a true Renaissance man who loved to explore the mountains, deserts, and rivers of the Southwest for climbing, hiking, and whitewater rafting. He was a woodworker, chef, and photographer with great interest in music, physics, and philosophy. Robert delighted in bringing friends together for feasting and fellowship. He could tell a good story and liked to regale his friends with tales from his far-flung travels. All right, moving on to the Cloud Hands section of Opening the Energy Gates. The next chapter is called Cloud Hands, Spiraling the Upper Body. So we've gone through the rooting through the legs, and now the arms is where this spiraling takes place. It says here, over time, students practicing Cloud Hands learn to connect the energy of the whole body to the spine. The alignments and turning motions of Cloud Hands form the foundation for the movements of Tai Chi and other internal arts. So it sounds like this twisting of the arms connects more deeply to the spine in the same way maybe the twisting of the legs connects into the quad and the hips.
Yes, it does. The way I would describe this version of Cloud Hands is it's the most directly sort of balanced, but focusing on the twisting, right? So like, it keeps the sense that both hands are just moving straight up and down, and that most of the sideways movement or all of the sideways movement is done with the waist, and that all the arms are doing is twisting, right? And so it doesn't have the thing of the arms making a circle like a figure eight kind of thing where your hand goes from your center line to your side. It keeps the hand sort of more in front. So my description of it is it's a Xingyi Bagua version of Cloud Hands, right? It's a bit less of the Tai Chi kind of structure and a bit more the way you would do it if you were doing one of those opening Jiben Gongs where you were just doing a palm strike and hitting the same spot over and over.
It's a stripped down version of the Cloud Hands. It's the most basic. Right. Simple, just the arm rotates as the waist turns. It's applicable to every different system, basically.
It keeps it as bare bones as possible as far as the movement so that you can really focus on these principles. And the biggest, you use a lot of other stuff, but the overarching principle of energy gates in terms of movement, right? Because dissolving is the one in terms of energy, but in terms of movement, it's twisting, right? So it's the twisting of the legs and the waist that moves you side to side. And it's the twisting of the arms that transfers that movement, up through your lower body, up into your upper body, right? It's from your lower body to your upper body. So, the sense of keeping the like skeleton still and twisting the soft tissue around the skeleton, right? That the bones might turn, but a bone twisting is what we call a joint lock. So you don't really want to do that, right? But you want to get the sense of all the soft tissue in your body twisting. And so, when you do this with a partner, usually there's a lot of stuff where they just grab your arm or your leg and they kind of twist your muscles back and forth and you just kind of stand there, letting them do it. And that's just to loosen up the lateral twisting in the limbs, because it's people are much tighter in that way than they are in a linear stretch, right? So the amount that you can stretch your arm, you know, forward and back by bending your elbow is infinitely larger than the amount you can stretch it from, you know, turning your hand over. But there is this ability to get it so that the gushy stuff in your arm can basically twist without you having to move your elbow up and down. So your elbow is a fixed point. And as you turn your hand and upper arm over, it creates this twisting, the spiraling motion. So the hand motion of this particular Cloud Hands is, you know, your elbow is facing down the whole time, right? And it doesn't really bend. It stays, you know, 70% at the bottom, and it turns over and it's 70% at the top. There's a slight bend in the middle sometimes, but that's actually, in my opinion, a downgrading of it, not an upgrade. That if you can keep this connection and twist it the whole time, it creates a bit more power, right? So I think what Bruce was really doing, you know, when he came up with this set, he was much more, I think, you know, from what I can tell, much more interested in Shingi and Bagua than he was in teaching Tai Chi, because Tai Chi was already out there and Shingi and Bagua were almost, you know, completely unknown. And so, you know, this was a way of doing Cloud Hands, quote unquote, but that would absolutely prepare you to do Tai Chi, but would also, if you chose, do prepare you to do something like Shingi or Bagua. So it was, you know, it was a little bit more yang, if you want to go with yin and yang, you know. Well, I mean, all you got to do is look at those old videos of him doing it. I mean, and it, you know, it's very extended and it's very big turns, you know, and it's huge, you know, he's got a huge stance and it's, I mean, it's not
very wide stance. Yeah. Well, the very original video that I saw, he did more of a Tai Chi Cloud Hands, even though the book taught the straight Cloud Hands. In the video, he actually did Tai Chi Cloud Hands.
So the original bit was more like a Tai Chi Cloud Hands, where you had the Peng Lu Jianan and your hand goes to the side a little bit as it turns over.
Right. But he stuck with a much simpler version for the book.
Well, he told me that he started with that one because that was already out there with, you know, Tai Chi and Chen Min Ching and all these guys. So he wanted to make it accessible, right? And then by the time I started, he had switched over to doing this other version that was a bit more, I think, I'm pretty sure it's Wang, the way Wang Shujing taught it to him, but
probably,
you know, this more sort of, if you will, generic martial version of Cloud Hands, you know, as opposed to a specific Tai Chi frame, you know, style.
Exactly.
I mean, that's one of the things, you know, in Bob's book, you know, he shows the difference between, you know, the way it's done in energy gates, the way it's done in the Yang style, the way it's done in the Wu style, and the way it's done in the Chen Min Ching style, which is a, you know, derivative of the Yang style. But, you know, so while it is the same exercise, there is a slight, you know, there are little tweaks you make depending on your, you know, preferences.
So he starts by saying that there's three steps to connecting your whole body and your spine, the energy of your whole body and your spine. The first, you join the legs energetically, like we've been talking about in the previous chapter. The energy that supports your spine comes from the earth through your legs. Now, secondly, the arms are joined to the spine, as this chapter is aimed at. And thirdly, the energies from the arms and legs are integrated with each other through the spine. At this stage, it's very important that the heaven and earth energy connection from above the head and below the feet be kept strong during the movements of Cloud Hands. Interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, twisting can be, you know, in terms of energetics, you can think of twisting as like, it's like mortar or, you know, something
bonding
that joins
some kind.
Yeah, like a bonding, you know, agent, you know, where it joins two things that are, you know, that are connected but loose. It tightens that connection, right? So
right.
It's the duct tape of internal connections, right? And so when you do things without twisting, they tend to be kind of floppy and they collapse, right? That they can't really hold up against pressure because at some point the direct pressure goes into the joint is just too much. Where when you twist, what it does is it takes the pressure away around the joints, around the insertion points, right?
Yeah.
And so a big part of doing this thing with the arm is essentially you're learning how to take pressure into your arm without your arm collapsing, right? So that somebody essentially when you're in that final position and your arm's extended, somebody can lean on either arm and it shouldn't collapse. You know, you should be able to just stand there no problem with somebody's full weight pressing on either arm.
Because that twisting action sort of winds the whole body like pulling a net or something. It sort of twists it and connects it all together in a non-rigid way.
Yeah, and it creates a path for the pressure to go through, right? Mm. So you're giving the torque a place to go. So instead of it going into the joint or just the weakest part of your muscle, it gives it a way around that and links it all together. So there's a really old, I think it's a Chen style, but it might even predate the Chen style. But it's just, you know, sort of two-dimensional drawing of a guy with spirals around his arms and legs. It's in almost every Tai Chi book that's ever been published. I know it's in Bruce's. But it's illustrating this, you know, that there's this flow that moves through the body in these spirals. Well, your muscles also move through your body in these same, basically the same pattern of spirals. So what you're doing with all this twisting is it's like the training wheels for your energy, right? It's like the more you twist your arm without losing that connection to your shoulder, the more your shoulder and your arm kind of, you know, talk to each other essentially. Mm-hmm. And then that creates this ability to move something, you know, pressure, chi, gravity, whatever you want to call it, from your back out through your arm, which is something you do every single time you pick something up or, you know, do, you know, anything. So it's a useful piece of, you know, mechanics.
So moving into lesson one here is the thing where it says connecting the arms to the spine. That's where you extend your hands out in front of you, and then you allow the elbow to drop so that you draw out you connect your elbow to the shoulder by dropping the elbow down and stretching all those tissues of the upper arm, armpit, right. Take out the slack. Exactly. That's a really valuable exercise.
Right. And the phrase he used to use a lot, I don't know if he still does as much, but it's taut but not tight. You're trying to get enough stretch in your body so that things aren't compressed, but not so much that your body starts to tense up. And so, you know, that balance in there is a little tricky to find, but that's part of what, you know, this sort of 70% rule thing kind of helps with that. You know, you get, if you pull your arm all the way out, it has to tense up to hold it. If you pull it back a little bit, it can relax and you can kind of over time get the ability to really keep it there without it shrinking back in. Cause that's a big problem as you go through the set that the body wants to contract.
So it says here, you raise the arms, then you open the shoulder blades, and third, you sink the elbows. Let the elbows drop slightly as if weights were attached to them, pulling them down. In order to do this, the area the Chinese call the shoulder's nest must be opened, creating a hollow between the inner edge of the shoulder and the ribs. This area, in time, becomes extremely soft and very flexible. When this hollow is produced in the shoulder's nest, the shoulders sink and the elbows drop easily and comfortably without conscious thoughts.
Yeah, the classic phrase from Tai Chi is like sink the shoulder and drop the elbow. Maybe it's drop the elbow and sink the shoulder. But it's this sense that even though your arm is essentially not going anywhere, your shoulder drops and then your elbow drops a little bit more to, again, to take away that slack. So And all of that happens without your hand coming back towards your body. So it again, it's just this elongating of the tissue from your shoulder, you know, from your spine to your fingertips, essentially.
And like you were saying, the action of the muscles is a guide for the energy. He says, you know, this dropping of the elbow connects the arm energetically to the spine, much like branches grow out of a tree trunk and yet are not separate from the tree. So you're building this connection. The chi from the spine flows through the shoulders, and that way, you know, this muscular action paves the way for the energy to flow properly.
Right. I mean, you know, the energy will flow no matter what unless you're dead. It's a question of how well it flows and how aware you are of that flow, right? So, you know, to say you're going to create chi is actually a little bit of a, not really. What you're going to do is you're going to feel it and you're going to focus on it and you're going to direct it, but it's already there. You're not creating it, right? Energy cannot be created or destroyed, only transferred or transformed, right? So when you're doing something like this, you know, on one level, there is no difference between your physical body and the energy inside of it. They are intrinsically linked for all time, right? But you can, if you build awareness, you can, you know, differentiate between the two. So, you know, if I hit you in the shoulder with a sledgehammer, it's going to damage your physical body and your energy body, right? So the same goes for, you know, or if I stick an acupuncture needle in you and, you know, twist it the wrong way, it's going to mess up your physical body. So I think it's a mistake to get too focused on which one's which, but just to be able to start with the physical one and say, okay, I can feel that connection. And when I stretch my arm out and I drop my elbow and I extend my fingertips a little bit, and especially if you hold it for 5 minutes, you'll really start to notice, you know, the places where your body is blocked, and now you're back to standing again. But anyways, but that as you begin to move, this connection has to maintain itself, right? So again, you know, the Tai Chi has a lot of good phrases for this stuff. The one is from posture to posture, the internal energy is unbroken, right? Well, how do you go from one posture to the next without breaking your internal energy? Well, you move by not breaking your alignments, right? And so the action of sort of pulling your arm out from your back just takes away some of that slack, you know, so that you can actually feel, you know, when your arm does something, your back feels it, right? Your back has an awareness of, oh, I can feel the muscles in my back twist when I turn my hand over. If you have too much if there's too much slack, it just gets lost in the you know, the fog of the whole thing.
And with that, we've come to the end of the first lesson on the upper body.
All right. Well, that was
good conversation.
You know, I would really urge people to look up Bob's material. I think you can still get his, he has a Yang style DVD set, and his book is out there, and his book is really worth, I mean, especially if you're practicing the energy gate stuff, it's sort of like the addendum to Bruce's chapter on cloud hands. He goes a little bit deeper in you know, explaining the different levels of cloud hands that Bruce doesn't really get into in the energy gates book.
Talk to you later.
All right, man. Take care.
Hey folks, Isaac here. Just a quick plug. I'm going to be teaching some spine qigong for the next couple of months in my Thursday class. So if you're interested in learning some of that stuff, they'll have a chance. Also, we're thinking about doing a live event where people can, you know, tune in and ask us questions and get an inside look into how we, you know, prepare for this stuff and what our take on it is and all that. So if you're interested in that, let us know. All right. Take care and thanks for listening.